So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, producer Matt here with one final message about our crowdfunding campaign. Our target is £9,000 to bring you a year of programmes. We're currently at around £3,500, so that gives us until Friday, less than a week, to raise just over £5,000. Otherwise, there will be no more editions of the media podcast. And this is Kickstarter, which means it's all or nothing. So if you love what we're doing here and the time and effort we put into making each half hour program, this is your very last chance to show it. Go to themediapodcast.com, hit pledge and give what you can. In return, there are a whole bunch of rewards you can choose. My favourite at the moment is bird watching with John Plunkett. It's a day of twitching, it says here, with The Guardian's foremost media correspondent and amateur bird watcher. There are enough of you out there that we could do this if we all gave a tenner. That's themediapodcast.com. Hit pledge and get us to £9,000. The Media Podcast is a PPM production and not affiliated with The Guardian in any way. And now, the show.
Hello, I'm Ollie Mann. This week, changes to the team sheet at Five Live as high-profile names make way for the return of some familiar voices. Women's Hour gives up on Salford and doing it for the kids as independent producers call on the government to give children's TV a break. All that and more on this week's packed media podcast from themediapodcast.com. Well, a warm welcome to our many listeners, not just in this country, but around the world. With me are two talented, erudite, masterful players of the media game. Do you get what we're doing? Just a minute, do you get it? To my right is Steve Ackerman, Managing Director of production company Something Else, and sitting on my left, it's James Robinson, former media editor at The Observer, now a consultant at Powers Court PR. Welcome, gents. Tell us something about your week without hesitation, repetition or deviation. Your 60 seconds start now.
I managed to record a new low in a pub quiz. Well, it wasn't a pub quiz. It was a quiz at the FT's Alphaville annual conference, which I know sounds shockingly uninteresting and boring. But it was we got minus 30, our team finished last.
Wow.
Which was quite impressive. A negative score, I think.
Minus 30.
Yeah, we didn't get a single question right.
Were you trying to fail, or were you actually...
I was quite inebriated. I was fairly hammered. That didn't help.
It's a pub quiz. That's not an excuse.
Yes, indeed. No, it was shameful. That's the low light of my week.
And Steve, can you top that? I'm guessing you can.
No, well, I don't think I can, actually. Getting minus 30 in a pub quiz, that definitely, I mean, that's sensational. That's to be respected. No, I mean, my week, I suppose, today enjoyed seeing an early screening of a, if you're into Northern Soul, which so many people suddenly reveal that they are.
Oh, yeah.
We've made a great doc about it for BBC4, which is definitely worth catching. It's on, I'm not quite sure when the TX date is, but very soon, some point over the summer. So that was just fantastic to watch at lunchtime today.
But surely in the spirit of Northern Soul, you should not watch it now and then rediscover it in 40 years' time.
Indeed, or go over to America and find a little cassette in a box. And, yeah, exactly.
Right, well, that's more than enough of that. We're going to start this week's proper media stories at 5 Live, the news and sports speech station, where some familiar names are being shuffled in the schedule. schedules. Sheila Fogarty, Victoria Derbyshire and Richard Bacon, all gone. The winners include Tony Livesey and Football Focus host Dan Walker, both familiar voices on the network but now getting permanent weekday shows. Adrian Chiles is going to present a new morning programme called Five Live Daily between 10 and 1 on Mondays and Tuesdays. And then Peter Allen, the veteran Peter Allen, I think we call him, will take that slot for the rest of the week. That's a lot of changes, isn't it, Steve? What's going on here, do you think, behind the scenes?
Well, there's a few things playing out here. First of all, you've got some contracts expiring. You've got, obviously, Five Live having moved to Salford and being true to its word to say that actually, you know, presenters have to be based there, because clearly a reason for the move was that culturally the BBC would then have something coming from somewhere else and would hopefully start to reflect the region a bit more. You also obviously have DQF, Delivering Quality First, and these are, you know, there are cuts that every network has to make, and of course extending programmes from 2 to 3 hours or reducing the amount of programmes and presenters you've got on the network means you do save costs, as well as the fact that if you've had presenters there for a while who through a period of time probably have had some pay rises over that time, again you've got a cost saving there as well. So I think those are two of the key drivers behind what we're seeing.
And will there be any drop, though, in the amount of news that Five Live is able to cover as a result? The reason I ask that is I think about my alma mater, Saturday Edition, has also been axed as part of these changes, although Chris Warburton's getting Weekend Breakfast, so well done him. But that show was all about covering things they didn't cover the rest of the week, so online news I used to do, but they had books, they had travel, they had gaming, stuff that Five Live didn't do elsewhere in the schedule, and I wonder if they're actually sacrificing some of the specialist areas as well.
Well, if you remember, the BBC Trust really pulled Five Live up a little bit and said there needs to be a bit more news content than there is. TalkSport had made a bit of a fuss about the fact that Five Live was starting to go down a bit of an entertainment route. And obviously, if you look at something like Richard Bacon's show, then even though it definitely, when it needed to, touched on some very serious and difficult issues, obviously Richard's skill was also that he could turn to the lighter side and actually made a play of that. He had a real energy and zest about him. So actually, I don't think it's going to be less news. There's going to be an increase in news. And I think what you see on the schedule is a more serious-looking schedule. Now, you can argue, is that good for Five Live, or is that kind of the reason people tune into Five Live? You know, do they like the fact that currently on Five Live there is a sort of a lighter side and that some of that news is presented in a bit more informal way? That's maybe a debate for another time. But you will see, I think, Five Live becoming much more news-centred.
Well, that's the thing, James, isn't it? When Richard Bacon's interviewing Tony Blair, that is news and it rates. When he's interviewing Bruce Forsyth, maybe that's not news, but it rates. If you haven't got him doing that, if you've got them talking about a melange of sort of stories locally and internationally, is that going to appeal the same sort of listeners?
Well, I actually don't think the content is going to change that much because of new presenters. I think the more interesting thing about it is the fact that it's now becoming bloke FM, more so now than ever. And I think if you lose women of that, you know, women presenters, female presenters of that calibre, for whatever reason, cost cutting or, you know, they've got a better offer from elsewhere, you really got to ask yourself, where the station is heading and whether it's going to alienate, you know, what female, I don't know how many female listeners it has, but which the female listeners it does have. You mentioned Talk Sport and kicking up a fuss about the straying onto their territory. I think if you're someone like LBC, you'd be even more annoyed that you're really seeing the creation of a radio station that funded by licence fee money that already exists in the private sector. I mean, it's sort of gone for that. They deny it, but it is that white van man market, isn't it? And I think that's an interesting. I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm just surprised that at a time they're meant to have more female voices on air, that they're not replacing these people, departed talent with new women.
No, I think you're definitely right on that front, and clearly that's been a major point that's come in the headlines out of the announcement of the schedule. And obviously it is at a time as well when the BBC has very publicly said it wants to increase the amount of women on air. There is, it wasn't very well publicised, but alongside Dan Walker, it's actually a double-headed show.
Co-host.
So there is a female co-host there as well, who's I think a lady who's come from local radio and maybe
BBC Northern Ireland.
Right. Yeah. So she's, obviously there wasn't much pickup because she isn't a well-known name yet. And actually in the past, maybe one thing Five Live has always specialised in is is bringing onto the network people you haven't really heard of and really developing them as very strong national broadcasters, which was definitely true of Victoria Derbyshire and Sheila yeah. Fogarty.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll see that happen again. But I think you're definitely right. That is a big perception problem for Five Live.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure you're right about the new talent and the track record they've got of developing talent. But you know, equally we've got Adrian Charles, you know, who's sort of, to say he's well established is understating it.
It was one of the first voices on Five Live, wasn't
yes
he?
In fact yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. And you know, he's sort of, it's funny, isn't it, it's the man the BBC turn to whenever they want someone who they feel can reach the parts of the audience others don't.
But
know,
actually, I mean,
sort of a, I mean, he's quite a middle-class bloke from Quinton, actually. But anyway,
but he's been tainted a bit by Daybreak, I think. And actually, people are sort of unfairly forget that he did do Working Lunch and Five Live and stuff before, which he was very well regarded for, wasn't it? It would be a bit unfair for him to be completely annexed from any career now just because Daybreak didn't work.
No, it's good to see you. No, I'm glad. I'm really pleased for him, and I think he's a great. He's got a fantastic personality. He's just a great voice on radio. So I'm not dissing Adrian Charles, you know, but I just think. I just think that you do have to ask questions about the balance, the gender balance.
And what do you think will be next for the presenters that have gone? I mean, those are all quite big names, aren't they? Sheila Fogarty, I note, is covering LBC at the moment.
Well, Victoria Derbyshire is a massive loss, and she's extremely talented. And I think I've read in the speculation thus far that she's definitely not going to Newsnight, which would have been my guess, actually, that would have been an obvious place for her to turn up. But... yeah, and Richard Bacon obviously is now, I guess he's going to become a TV star, isn't he? That's the way he's going to go, having established himself on radio. But, you know, I think Victoria, I mean, you wonder what Victoria Derbyshire could... She can turn her hand to anything. She's going to BBC News, isn't she, I think. But she's not going to be a newsreader, is she, clearly? So it'll be fascinating. I'll be interested to see what she ends up.
Yeah, I think I'd be surprised if something didn't occur for her on Radio 4, because you just think that's a perfect place for her. But I think you're right. I mean, the LBC angle is fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, LBC the past 18 months has, I think, really emerged as a fascinating story and quite a powerhouse. And if I was LBC, I wonder if they'd be looking at one or two of these names and thinking, actually, these could be really good for us.
And whilst we're on the topic of radio at the BBC, we learned this week as well that Woman's Hour is to leave Salford and return to London. Currently, three editions a week are produced from Salford Quays, but from next April, the show's going to come entirely from BH. Now, that is part of the wider Delivering Quality First plan, which is really about cutting 40 jobs from the radio division. But it does seem to contradict recent efforts, doesn't it, to move production away from the capital. So, Steve, this is a bit of a mess, isn't it? Conflicting signals here. You know, let's regionalise and then let's bring Women's Hour back. What was it doing there in the first place?
Oh, come on, it's not a mess. This is a classic story for me of where newspapers want to just clobber the BBC for being the BBC. Because, of course, you know, leave aside the fact that half the show was produced up in Salford, the sensible thing is, of course, the show should be produced from one place. And to be honest, there's plenty of stuff coming from Salford now. If you've ever been up there, you can see it really is established as a broadcast centre. And most importantly, recruitment is now happening from within the Northwest rather than obviously what had to happen when they started, where lots of people transferred from London. So you know what? If one show for 3 days of its week now comes from London, I don't see that as a big deal at all.
But what I was going to say, sorry, that surely the problem is that producing a show from two locations must be a nightmare logistically.
Yeah,
and expensive. So, exactly. So you're right. I mean, it doesn't make sense to produce a show in two places.
Well, it doesn't make sense, but that is what the BBC does, isn't it? The BBC does it across TV. Loads of shows are made from two places, one in Scotland, one in London. It doesn't make any sense, but they do it politically. I mean,
if the logic is to try and save costs by doing it in one place, then why wouldn't you do it in Salford rather than London? So I disagree to an extent. You know, if you're going to do it in one place, do it in the place where you've just spent, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds establishing. It does seem odd.
I mean, the wider thing is, this is just tinkering around the edges anyway. Mm. You want to make savings. Radio is not the place you're going to find loads of savings, because anybody who works in radio knows how cost-effective it is and you know, how much you can create on pretty small resources. You really want to save significant amounts of money, you have to look at the TV pie.
I mean, Steve, you make a lot of radio content for the BBC. What difference does the presenter's location actually make to the show and more importantly, I guess, to the listener?
I think it depends on the programme, actually, because really I think it depends on the outlook the presenter can bring. So what we were discussing earlier, if a presenter is actually living in a location, that I think is the important thing, because you think of what they're absorbing around them in their everyday life. That's obviously going to reflect on it. If they are commuting up to a location day after day, well, really, that's smoke and mirrors. You know, should the BBC be producing programmes from outside London? Personally, I think of course it should, because the BBC is obviously publicly funded, and there's no doubt about it. If you have everyone based in one place, you create a media bubble, and there's only a certain spread of views that you can easily share and reflect. Whereas if you're broadcasting from a different place, you are going to absorb different influences and cultures, and you're going to hear different voices. So I think it does make a difference, actually.
Yeah, but the thing is, you could argue the BBC has always done that, and of course the places that suffer when by having Manchester as the not London, you know, quote unquote, is that places like Glasgow, Birmingham, Nottingham, which did have smaller but still significant centres. You know, it is a good thing, but it's just, you know, it's a lot of money to big up Manchester at the expense of other regional centres.
And then you get back to the argument as well about why 5 Live, because that station always sounded like the whole country anyway, with presenters from all over the country, people calling in from over the country. It's Radio 4 that sounds like it's from London, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You put Radio 4 up there and then you get a real difference. But, you know, I think the actual number of people watching BBC shows in the Northwest has risen slightly, according to BBC Insiders, since that move, which was remarkable, isn't it? That it is actually having an effect on audiences, apparently, because, you know, the TV programmes are produced down the road, you know. So it does make a difference.
Well, we're very proud of our location coming right from the heart of Soho. You're listening to The Media Podcast with me, Ollie Mann. Right, a quick swing around some of the other mid-media stories of the week. That's a reference to what we're about to talk about. Alan's going to be up with the Partridge as a second run of Mid-Morning Matters has been ordered by Sky Atlantic. I actually didn't see this one coming because it's quite a small production, this, isn't it? And you'd think once they got the Partridge movie off the ground, they wouldn't still be keen on doing this kind of thing. You excited, Steve, about more Partridge on telly?
Well, the film was excellent. I mean, I didn't see the series, the first series, though I did sort of track it because I was really fascinated about the fact that, if you remember, Foster's actually funded that, which was very fascinating and was something they'd done previously, I think, with The Fast Show, where they brought back some, you know, they sort of created new episodes of The Fast Show. So I think that's interesting. Obviously, what's interesting here is Foster's have now dropped out and it's carrying on, but I suppose...
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's also shows, you know, a love from Henry Normal and Steve Coogan for the characters, but also those guys are great at exploiting what they have. And you've got to think, well, there's the box set to come afterwards, and there's the, you know, maybe they're looking at movie 2 and they think, well, you know, what they need is just a little series that's going to maintain the sort of interest in the character. You know, those guys are very, very smart guys, so I don't think this is happening just because they think they can get a quick commission away.
Yeah, it's sort of, I think it's called in city parlance, sweating your assets, isn't it?
Well, also, they kind of get to research the character in a way and get paid for it, don't they? They're almost writing the movie whilst they're making
I was thinking, absolutely. I'm a bit, I don't know if it's, you're allowed to say this, but I'm slightly partridged out, to be honest.
That is sacrilegious.
Yeah, I know it is sacrilegious, isn't it? But the film was a huge success, as you say. I'm sure there's going to be a sequel. It's quite interesting that there hasn't been more examples of of programs that either started, you know, advertiser funded, that have moved to mainstream TV. Though that actually hasn't happened as much as you'd think, or you know, online programs equally that have gone on to mainstream TV.
Well, you're right, but do people even consider Sky Atlantic mainstream TV realistically? And this is the thing, this is about Sky's deep pockets, isn't it? And I mean, Steve, you've made shows for Sky Arts, Ronnie Wood Show. Do you think their strategy works of pouring money into British productions in a way that actually they're the kind of things even the BBC aren't funding?
Well, don't forget, I think for Sky, you know, a lot of money has gone into trying to create exclusive and original content that will appeal to, sorry for the advertising parlance, ABC ones.
Yeah.
Because obviously the two things they could always rely on were the football and movies. And the movie dominance is over now. Plenty of places you can get movies from. And football, obviously, with the deep pockets of BT, is very much under threat. Though, you know, don't rule Sky out. I mean, they're a phenomenal organisation. So what they've done is, through Sky Atlantic and through Sky Arts, they've turned to trying to create content that is bespoke and original and will appeal to what's the last bastion of people who haven't yet signed up for dishes.
Yeah, that's why Melvin Bragg going over there, you know, after his show, the South Bank was axed, was so great for them, wasn't it?
That's right. And
you know, reducing that reliance on sport and football in particular is obviously vital. And I mean, historically, of course, the way that they've done that, the way they've Sky have tried to widen their audience is by buying stuff in, you know, especially American imports, is one, Game of Thrones being a case in point. But so it's brilliant that they're actually spending money on the domestic, you know, UK content. It's great for them. It's great for the industry. It's great for the country.
It's good for their PR as well, isn't it? I mean, it's the kind of audience that wouldn't be particularly pro buying one of Murdoch's cable channels.
It's Murdoch
the kind
haters.
Of audience. Who say, "Well, yes, I do like Mad Men."
It's Guardian readers, you know.
Yeah.
And to attract them is quite a coup, isn't it, for Sky? Yeah.
Although I was thinking about the online point you were making and stuff transferring to TV. Something like Mid Morning Matters, it still looks a bit like an online thing. I wonder if really what you mean is what we don't see is many of those low-budget looking... It's only because it's Partridge. People will watch that on telly.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, the shift now is for online content like House of Cards to look like glossy TV. People don't want to watch lo-fi video blog-type content.
But also, I think that's a slight red herring, especially when it comes to brands, because I don't think there's many brands... You know, these days, the point about online, obviously, especially with the broadband capability and the amounts of money being spent there, are that brands don't need to transfer stuff to TV. They can create their own content. They don't need to worry about TV stations and commissioners who will be a bit of a gatekeeper and a block to what they want to do creatively. And when you look at what many brands are now doing, I mean, look at the current World Cup and the big Nike film, or look at obviously what Red Bull do. Or, you know, there's many, many examples you can cite of fantastic online content that's designed for online. And I think that's really the point. TV is kind of behind the curve a little bit in attracting brands and allowing brands to have the freedom to create programming.
And moving on to another type of TV now, let's see what's through the round window. Yes, Children's TV has a new cheerleader. Steve, would you care to share with us who is calling on the government to give kids' TV production a break?
I don't know.
Is it Floella Benjamin?
It is Floella Benjamin, yeah. We're not even in the quiz section of the show. Baroness Floella Benjamin, as she is now.
Yes, apologies. Yeah,
yes. Is leading calls for a tax credit to boost the homegrown kids' TV industry. The independent producers' trade body, PACT, is claiming a tax break for live-action children's production could be worth £3 million a year to the government. PACT says that tax breaks could encourage the likes of Disney and Viacom, who own Nickelodeon, to produce more kids' TV here. James, is the children's production sector in a bad state here as it is?
Well, I was about to say it's in a good place, isn't it? I mean, it's been a booming the children's TV, as you know, with two dedicated channels on the BBC, obviously. I mean, there are tax breaks for, you know, Steve will know better than me, for you know, almost every type of TV program already, isn't there? TV, film,
and games, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, but you know, why shouldn't children's TV benefit from the same tax breaks that are available elsewhere? Although, you know, tax breaks are not sort of you've got to be careful with tax breaks. You can end up in a terribly long and, you know, difficult dispute with the Inland Revenue in 5 years down the line. We're seeing that with film schemes now.
I think the timing is quite interesting because there's a clear agenda from government to encourage the creative industries. And actually, when you look at people like PACT, there's trade missions. I think we're about to do the second or third one out to China selling programs. There's just been a big trade mission for the creative industries out to China. And so I think maybe this is politics wheels in motion in terms of this is a good time to be going to government and saying, give us a helping hand, because I think government has recognised what the creative industries are now providing to the economy, and that if you're not going to rely on banking as much, you've got to find a few other things that are going to really contribute and be very unique to this country. Yeah. And I think that's something creatively we are very strong in the world.
Yeah, the service sector is bombed, and we don't know what, you know, we sort of deindustrialized to a large extent, and that the creative industries are a huge driver for London, the South East, and the rest of the country for going forward. So they're right to concentrate on that.
I imagine particularly with kids TV as well, we're very good at coming up with the ideas, and we've got this rich heritage going all the way back to Paddington, Wind of the Willows, Enid Blyton and everything else. But actually, if you're making kids TV, you need the merchandise sorted out, you need the international rights. I guess this is just saying, well, if the money's going to come from America, at least make it here where the idea came from, even if it's not our money going into it.
Yeah, I'm sort of intrigued behind some of the thinking here. I mean, as James said, there is quite a lot of strong kids content coming out of the UK, but I suppose maybe they are looking at things like the film sector that has attracted a lot of investment, and maybe the thinking is, you know, this could be the next area.
Okay, moving on to music now, and it's Rest in Peace Blackberry's Music and Video Store. I know we knew you so well. Do you think, James, this is growing evidence of the shift from download to streaming, really? Yeah, people aren't buying music because they're streaming it.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, so, you know, obviously we all owned our music physically in form of vinyl or CDs once, and then we owned it digitally in the form of, you know, on iTunes or whatever else. And on a BlackBerry were never, you know, they weren't, you know, that wasn't their key strength. You know, the media offer on BlackBerry music and TV and the rest wasn't its key strength. But it is, you know, why do you need it? You subscribe to Spotify or similar platform and listen to the music like you would listen to the radio. So I think that's what it's about, really. BlackBerry have got their own problems, but I think they are relaunching a music service in about a month's time, which I imagine will focus on streaming rather than downloads.
Mm. Well, I think there's sort of two things at play here. I mean, first of all, BlackBerry is a brand is just dead, you know, dead and buried. And
well, I don't know though, because every business person's got one.
No, but
every
you know what?
Businessman's got a BlackBerry.
But I'm not sure even that's so true at the moment. No. I mean, you know, would I bet on BlackBerry being around in 18 months? I'm not sure I would. That's the first thing. You know, the second thing is, are we all streaming? Actually, I don't think we are yet. Mm. But clearly, the big players in the market identify that we will be. And so, you know, there is obviously a big battle going on in that space in terms of new services launching all the time, and there are going to be some casualties along the way.
And of course, as we discussed briefly last week, there's this new change now in the UK Top 40 as well, where streaming's going to count towards the music charts. Steve, when you're programming a music show, or at least one where you have the freedom to create your own playlist rather than obeying whatever the BBC have laid down, do you look at streaming data as well? Because it's a major tool for discovery now, isn't it? Is how people find new music.
Well, not just streaming data. Don't forget, things like YouTube YouTube is the number one discovery site for, I think, 15 to 24s in terms of music. I think I'm right in saying that. And if not the number one, definitely right up there. Now, you wouldn't consider YouTube a streaming, you know, it's not a streaming service in any way at all. But it is somewhere people go to find out things. So it's not necessarily about looking at, who's listening to what streams. But it is about thinking about data and what part that can play in editorial.
Okay, it is 6:10 on the hottest evening of the year. We are schwitzing in here. There is a pool of sweat all around, so you'll be pleased to know, guests and audience alike, that we are on to the final segment of the show. But the star of the show, we save the best for last, it is the Media Podcast Quiz, which for completely incomprehensible reasons, we change format of every single week. This week, I'm going to give you three questions with all the right words, just not necessarily in the right order. And producer Pete thinks this is an amusing nod to the reshuffle at 5 Live. So, here goes. Can you unjumble the jargon to give me an answer? Which story am I talking about? The winner gets a cream egg. The loser does the dishes. Here we go. Question number one. Character which is shape-shifting reanimated to be?
Morph.
Very good. So the question was, unscrambled for you listeners at home, which shape-shifting character is to be reanimated? The answer is Morph, who might be pushing 30 but not showing his age. His creator, Peter Lord, launched a crowdfunding campaign. I've heard of those. It's one of my favourite podcasts has got one of those. Which last year raised a staggering £110,000, enough for Aardman to produce 15 new episodes, which will be published on the web. And maybe you might make it onto Sky Atlantic. You never know. Then we'll have a second example.
That's inevitable, yeah.
Right, question number two. Steve, this is really where you have to step up to the mark here, otherwise you're going to lose.
I'm ready.
Okay. Turning new lads over is a Leaf mag, which?
Oh,
James. Is that how I buzz? James.
You did, yeah. I think, I mean, Steve said
I'm going to hand it to Steve just to make it an exciting end climax to the competition.
Oh, I like your thinking.
This is loaded.
It is loaded. The question is, which lads mag is turning over a new leaf? The answer is Loaded. Steve, why?
Am I right in saying they're not putting ladies on the front cover?
Ladies.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about they're not having women on the front cover?
No, topless women?
Until the next relaunch, that is the case.
Which just seems, I mean, isn't that what Loaded's about? I mean, I'm not trying to defend it, but I'm just saying, isn't that what
it
the
is now,
is?
But it used to be quite good writing, didn't it? And sort of gonzo journalism, but it's, you know. It's,
yeah, but come on. It's too late now. Was buying Loaded because of the good writing.
I absolutely disagree.
half and half. What's weird is if you're relaunching the magazine and say we're moving away from our image either of sort of laddishness or, you know, girls with their boobs out, a bit weird to put Oasis on the front cover, isn't it? I mean, it does seem to reek of classic Loaded in a slightly unflattering way. It was a Britpop nostalgia issue, but still slightly odd choice.
I think I'm right in saying that Stuff magazine has done the same thing, hasn't it? And noticed that their sales went up, which
I'm so glad to hear.
Quite right too.
It's, you can get it all on, you know, if you want to see naked women, you just...
Stuff magazine for the naked women. That was about... I've asked about this because I write about gadgets as well. Why is there a naked woman on the front of Stuff when it's just full of HTC Ones and iPhone 5Ss? And you'd think that the gadget-buying public would rather see an Xperia on the front than some tits. The answer is it's about where it gets listed in WH Smith.
What, the part of them?
It gets displayed in men's interest it has a woman on the front, and that's the reason. It's just sales data. So I'm pleased that sales have gone up, if that's true, because, it was always nonsense, wasn't it? And embarrassing to read on the tube. Right. And finally, rant over. Question three. Are we in a tie-break situation? Yes.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks
to my generosity.
Thanks to sportsmanship.
Yeah. Okay. Taking is TV channel asked to circus which see the... That is really hard. Taking is TV channel asked to circus... Which seether?
Right, you've completely.
Yeah,
it's
it's a hard one.
Conscious thoughts.
Okay, I'll translate the question for you. You probably won't get it.
We won't get it. Yeah.
Which TV channel is taking us to see the circus?
Is this about Rome or ancient Rome?
Keep playing Malik's Malik with this.
A new.
Who has a famous circus?
Is it
a circus of pensionable men? With
Monty
parrots.
Python.
There we go.
So which TV channel is
it? But I don't know the answer.
Oh, I do. It's is it UK Gold?
Yes.
They're showing one of the Monty Python shows.
Correct. Oh. Gold is to broadcast the last Monty Python stage show live from the O2 on Sunday, the 20th of July. I think I'm doing my hair that evening. mixed reviews of the stage show, though. Some people are saying it is good. Does it just come down to whether you're a Python fan? I've never found them that funny, apart from the films. Films are good. Steve, would you go and see it?
Well, I won't go and see it, but ultimately I think it does boil down to if you're a Python fan, and I think the reviews are kind of irrelevant. It's one of those events that if you're a fan, you want to be at.
Yeah, and it depends on that. It all depends on what the sketches they do, because really, I mean, people only know three sketches, don't they? Three or four. The rest of them are completely obscure, I'll be interested to see which ones they do and how they make it last, you know, an hour and a half, actually.
Well, and how the atmosphere sustains, because it's a stadium. I mean, well, it's an arena. Why would you go and watch comedy in an arena? But everyone does it
before,
now, don't they?
Ollie, you're about 10 years behind the curve here.
I know, but
it's Newman and Badil.
I've never understood why, you know, people are queuing around the block to watch Miranda Hart and Michael McIntyre in an arena.
Anywhere.
Yeah. That's a separate issue. It'll be harsh, yeah. Right, that is the end of this week's quiz. You each... win with 1.5 points each. Enjoy your midsummer cream egg. It's over there in a horrible melty puddle with our sweat. My thanks to James Robinson, Steve Ackerman, and to you for listening. If you haven't pledged already, this is your last chance to back our Kickstarter campaign. By the time you listen to next week's pod, the campaign will be over, and that could be the last episode. And in fact, I'm going on my holidays this week. I won't be here next week, so this is my only chance to say, on behalf of me, I've really enjoyed being here. Please do pledge to the campaign. Full details are at themediapodcast.com. If you have pledged already, then ignore all that. Thanks very much, but take to Twitter and help spread the word. We live at The Media Podcast. The last of our 6 free shows will be presented by Miranda Sawyer. The Media Podcast is a PPM production. I've been Ollie Mann. The producer was Peter Price. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.